How many people here have a grudge against somebody else that you're holding? Oh, 4 of us. The rest of you don't hold any grudges? Really? Let's try this again. How many people hold grudges against other people who have harmed them? Better. How many of you are not telling the truth? Okay. It can be hard to admit that we hold grudges. Yeah, but in order to have peace in our own mind, we have to start out by admitting that we are holding grudges. Yeah, because if we can't admit our own faults and our own weaknesses and our own afflictions, then there's no way that we're ever going to be able to counteract them and overcome them. Instead, we'll just keep going along with them. So I emphasize this a lot because I come from a family that holds grudges. So much so that when you say, I am never going to speak to that person again, you never break that promise. All your other promises, you break, you renegotiate. I will never speak to that person again. Yeah, we never budge from that. And who suffers? Who suffers? When you hold a grudge against somebody, who's suffering? Is the other person suffering? No, they're on vacation somewhere. They're enjoying themselves. Who's suffering? When you think every day, they did this to me, day they did that to me, how could I? How could they treat me like this? I can't stand them. Who's suffering when you think like that? Hello? Yeah, who's suffering? Ourselves. Yeah, so who needs to change? Ourselves, we do. Yeah, we can't go through life pointing our finger. I'll forgive them after they apologize. Yeah. First, they must apologize. Then I will graciously forgive. No. It doesn't matter whether they apologize or not. Yeah. Their apologizing is what they do for themselves. Our forgiving is what we do for ourselves. Yeah. And forgiving is simply meaning, I'm tired of being angry. I'm tired of suffering from my anger. It's not worth it. Whatever happened in the past is over. It's done with. I don't need to sit and think about it every day and get upset about it every day. You know, I look at it, I learn from the experience, I go on. Yeah, then your mind is free, isn't it? Then your mind is free. But when you really want to, you know, get your revenge, then your mind is totally captivated. You know, it's not a free mind. It's a suffering mind. Okay, so we have to be very clear that the afflictions make us suffer. Yeah, the afflictions, the klesa. Yeah, these make us suffer. So ignorance is the root one. Then it gives rise to attachment. I want to possess, this is mine. And anger, get this away. And then that creates suffering. And then we're just reborn in samsara again and again and again. Yeah. So it's created by our mind. Yeah, our problems are not due to other people. I say that because Singaporeans, by and large, can't stand their bosses. They complain to me constantly about their bosses. Your boss is not the cause of your suffering. Your afflictions and karma are. Okay? Somebody criticizing you is not the cause of your misery. You're being sensitive to criticism, your attachment to praise and aversion to blame are the what's causing you problems. Yeah. Because if you become an arhat, if you become a bodhisattva, a high-level bodhisattva, people criticize you, no problem. No problem. Yeah. In fact, yeah, for those highly realized beings, they love it when people criticize them because it gives them the opportunity to practice fortitude. Yeah, and developing fortitude and the ability to endure discomfort and suffering and criticism, that is a virtue that we need to create to attain awakening. And we can only create it when there's people who do things we don't like. So bodhisattvas say, somebody's insulting me? Yippee! Yeah? So you see, it's actually possible if we remember. Yeah? If we don't remember, then even somebody is not insulting us, but we misinterpret something they say, then we get totally bummed out. And nothing's coming from them at all. It's all, you know, prapancha is the Pali word. Yeah. The Tibetans call it something like superstitious thought, conceptualization. All this blah blah that's going on in our mind, which is really not very useful. So with that as an introduction, we're going to talk about the Dung Beetle Sutra and the kind of conceptualizations that are plaguing one monk who has a problem. And he's an example of all the rest of us, whether you're ordained or not. Okay. So this is from the Samyutta Nikaya, 17.5. So dwelling at Savati. So that's Shravasti in Sanskrit. That's the name of the abbey where I live. Okay. Named after the Shravasti in India. So monastics, this is what the Buddha is saying, monastics, gains, offerings, and fame are a cruel thing, a harsh, bitter obstacle. Wait a minute, what's the Buddha talking about? Gains, offerings, and fame are a cruel thing, an obstacle? Isn't that what you're all looking for in your life? Aren't you looking for gain? Don't you want a promotion? Yeah? Don't you want a pay raise? Don't you want a new flat? And a new car? Yeah? And the latest iPhone. Yeah? Yeah? So you want gain. You want offerings. Yeah? Your paycheck is an offering. Yeah, from your employer. Don't think I earned it, it's mine. It's the kindness of the employer who offers you your paycheck. Fame, we could use a little bit of that too, couldn't we? Aren't you the best employee your company ever had? Yeah, isn't your company so fortunate to have you working there? Wouldn't you like to be recognized as the best employee of the month? Yeah. Maybe renowned in Singapore, have the Straits Times do an interview about you. Yeah, because you're such a good worker. Or maybe for your hobbies, you're so good at that. Yeah, you want an article about you in the Straits Times. Or forget the Straits Times. How about the New York Times? International edition. Yeah, that's even bigger circulation. Yeah, a little bit of fame wouldn't hurt. So what in the world's the Buddha talking about when he says gains, offering, and fame are a cruel thing, a harsh and bitter obstacle? When that's what you want in your life. What's he talking about? Yeah. So he says it's a harsh and bitter obstacle to the attainment of the unexcelled rest from bondage. In other words, from nirvana. Okay, so that kind of attachment to gains, offering, and fame are an obstacle to attaining nirvana. So that puts us in a rather peculiar position because we want gain and offerings and fame. But it's an obstacle to nirvana. So do we really want nirvana? Or would we rather have gains, obstacles, offerings, and fame? Do we really want nirvana? Or do we want worldly happiness? Which one do you want? Both. Yeah. I want my cake and I want to eat it too. Yeah. I want both. Yeah. So then you hear terms like the union of samsara and nirvana. And without understanding what it means, you say, that sounds good. That's what I want. Yeah. Give me my samsaric happiness. And I don't really understand what nirvana is, but it sounds good too. Give me that. Yeah. Samsaric happiness I will work hard for. Yeah, I get up early every morning. I go to work. Yeah, I endure all these things at work. But when it comes to nirvana, you know, I'm really too tired by that time. Yeah, and why can't I get nirvana free? Yeah, there should be some things quick, cheap, and easy. Nirvana should be like that. Huh? Why do I have to create the causes for it? Why can't I just receive a blessing? Why can't the Buddha go boing, boing? Yeah, give me some blessed water. Then, nirvana. Yeah, that, I want nirvana to be like that. Well, sorry, folks. I have to disappoint you. But, you know, just as worldly happiness, we have to create the causes for it, so too the bliss, the joy, the happiness of nirvana, we need to create the causes for that as well. Yeah, and we have to do it ourselves. Nobody else can do it for us. Yeah, you might be able to talk somebody into going to work for you while you get most of the paycheck and give them a little bit. But you can't talk somebody into practicing the Dharma for you and then you get the good result while they don't. Okay? So practicing the Dharma, it's like eating, sleeping. These are things we have to do ourselves. We can't hire anybody else to do them. Okay? And it doesn't have to be a pain in the neck to practice the Dharma, because actually, the more we practice, the more we receive the benefits from that, and the happier we are. So the practice, the joy of the practice, feeds upon itself. Yeah, it nourishes You look at your teachers. Are your teachers like depressed people? Oh, I have to practice the Dharma. I'm aiming for nirvana. This is, why do I have to do this? No? Are your teachers like that? No. Yeah? They're happy people, aren't they? So we will become happier if we practice. Okay. So, but first we have to understand why our worldly desires are an obstacle. Okay. So the Buddha gives an example here. Suppose there were a beetle, a dung eater. Yeah. So I guess, I've never seen one, but I'm guessing there are certain beetles in India, probably big, ugly ones, that feed on dung. Yeah? Do you have them here in Singapore? Or you pave them over with the... Yeah. Okay, so some kind of a beetle, a dung eater, full of dung. You know what dung is. Yeah. Poo. Yeah. Gorged with dung, with a huge pile of dung in front of him. Going, yum, 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 yum. Okay. He, because of that, would look down on other beetles. Yes, Siree, I am a dung eater, full of dung, gorged with dung, with a huge pile of dung in front of me. Yeah. So he's a pretty arrogant dung beetle. Okay? From our perspective, we look at that dung beetle and we go, why in the world is he arrogant? Yeah? Just because you eat poo and you have a big pile of poo in front of you, and you're filled to the brim with poo, does that make you spectacular? Does that make you better than anybody else? We look at such a beetle and we go, that guy's nuts. You know, dung is something you want to get rid of. We flush it down the toilet as soon as it comes out of us. Why is this guy so arrogant, collecting it, eating it, relishing it? Blech. Okay. So it's true, isn't it? We certainly wouldn't get arrogant being a dung eater. In the same way, the Buddha continues, there is the case where a certain monastic, conquered by gains, offerings, and fame, his mind consumed. Oh, people give me so much good stuff. I look like such a good monastic. I look holy. I look peaceful. Inside, I'm full of daydreams, but never mind. I look peaceful on the outside. I look respectful. I bow to the Buddha so perfectly. I talk so sweetly, especially to all the benefactors. I praise them. I flatter them. I'm such a nice person. And then they give me all sorts of stuff. Look what they gave me. Yeah. Aren't you jealous? Yeah? And then you should see the food I get. Oh my goodness. One huge table. Yeah? You've seen this, haven't you? Huge table. With maybe 30, 40, 50 dishes on it. Everybody brought something. And they're offering it to me. because I am such a fantastic Dharma practitioner. So I'll take that, and I'll take this, I'll take that. Actually, I don't need to take it, because they're all the benefactors want to serve me. So I can just sit. Oh, you can give me some of this. You can give me some of that. Yeah. Then they drive me places in their nice cars. Yeah. Look. Yeah. My benefactor has a Mercedes. My benefactor has a Lexus. They even have a Rolls Royce. Oh. I get to sit in the front seat when they drive me. Yeah. And then they all bow down to me. I walk in the room, they're all on the floor bowing to me. They all say, oh, Guru, you are so precious. You are so wonderful. I pretend to have equanimity inside. Ooh, goody! All these people love me. Maybe that means I'm a good person after all. Yeah, then they all talk to me, talk about their friends about me. You should go to the teachings of this person. Best teachings in the world. Oh, what are they about? Buddhism! That's what they teach, Buddhism. Okay. So, this monastic, conquered by gains, offerings, and fame, his mind consumed, puts on his robes, and carrying his bowl and outer robe, goes into a village or a town for alms. Okay. Having eaten there as much as he likes, yeah, full of alms food, because yeah, all the people in the village, either they piled stuff in his bowl. You see how big the bowls are in Thailand. Our bowls at the Abbey are like a third of the size. Our bowls are like this big. Yeah, Thailand, big bowls, aren't they? Yeah? So either they pile the food in there, or they set up this huge table. That table times four. Yeah? Filled with food. Okay? So, they give him alms food and invite him again for the next day. Yeah? So he eats plenty. He goes back to the monastery, and in the midst of a group of monks, boasts, I have eaten as much as I like. I am full of alms food and have been invited again for tomorrow. I am a recipient of robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicinal requisites for curing illness. Yeah. You other monks, do you have all these things? Do you receive as many offerings as me? Are your robes as nice as mine? Do you ride in Mercedes-Benz like me? Yeah? Do people bow down to you like they bow to me? Yeah? Showering me with red packets. Do they do that to you? Oh, poor other monastics. You don't get treated as well as I get treated. You're just back in the monastery studying, doing your practice, washing the floor. Yeah. You guys really don't count. Wait until you're like me. Yeah. So this monk is acting like that with all the other monks. Okay. So these other monks, though, have next to no merit, next to no influence. they aren't recipients of robes, alms food, lodging, and medicinal requisites for curing illness. So this is what the conceited monk is saying, you know. These other monks just, they don't measure up to me. Conquered by gains, offerings, and fame, his mind consumed, he looks down on other well-behaved monks. Yeah. So the other monks are back at the monastery, serving, practicing, teaching, meditating, studying. But this guy who gets so many perks looks down on them. Okay. So Buddha says, that will be for this worthless man's long-term suffering and harm. So the monastic who asks like that, he's basically, you know, creating the causes for a bad rebirth, wasting his opportunity with a precious human life. And, you know, due to arrogance, due to attachment, yeah, due to pretension and deceit, putting on an image, due to being a hypocrite, he's basically creating the cause for his own suffering. So that will be for this worthless man's long-term suffering and harm. That's how cruel gains, offerings, and fame are. Yeah. So what it means here, the problem is not the gains, offerings, and fame. The problem is the monk's attachment to them. Okay. Because the Buddha had gains, offering, and fame. They didn't pollute the Buddha's mind because the Buddha had no attachment to them. Yeah. But for somebody who has attachment to them, then these things are a harsh, bitter obstacle to the attainment of the unexcelled rest from bondage. So they're an obstacle to attain nirvana. Thus, you should train yourself, the Buddha tells the monastics. I will put aside any gains, offerings, and fame that have arisen, and will not let any gains, offerings, and fame that have arisen keep our minds consumed. That's how you should train yourselves. Now, you're sitting here listening to this, saying, yeah, Buddha's talking to those monks. They should really be renounced. But what the Buddha said doesn't apply to me. Because I'm a householder. Yeah. So I can have all these good things. Buddha's not talking to me. Yeah. I'm the one who can get the Mercedes. Yeah. I'm the one who can offer the best food. So, but the Buddha is talking to you. You know, sorry, folks. yeah. Because the Buddha's speaking with compassion to all of us. Doesn't matter whether we're lay or ordained. Buddha's talking to all of us. If you seek release from samsara, if you seek the bliss of nirvana, then attachment to worldly things is going to be the thing that brings you down. Okay? So you can have many good qualities, but when you get attached to worldly things, those and that attachment grasps you, you know, and you seek that, it's pulling you down. Yeah. Then we become like the dung beetles, you know? Like, because you look at that monk who's bragging and boasting about having so much food, but actually for him, because of his attachment, everything he has, you know, becomes a cause for lower rebirth because of his attachment, his competition, his arrogance. You know, the mind using these things is not a mind with a Dharma intention. It's a worldly intention. Yeah. So too, when we get attached to all these things and seek them, we're basically shooting ourselves in the foot. Yeah. Do you have that expression in Singapore? Yeah. When you self-sabotage, when you become an enemy to yourself, you shoot yourself in the foot. Yeah, making yourself miserable, crippling yourself. Okay. So, then you're going to go, yes, but... Yeah, that's the famous reply, yeah. Yes, that's true, but I'm a householder. What do you want from me? Yeah. Are you trying to tell me I can't have any pleasure? Is the Buddha saying that I have to suffer to attain nirvana? That experiencing any pleasure is bad and awful? No, that's not what the Buddha is saying. Yeah, like I said before, it's not the objects that are the problem. It's our attitude towards them, our relationships to them. Yeah. When we think that external things are going to make us everlastingly happy, when we think that external possessions, societal fame, praise, when we think that is going to make us a good person, a worthwhile person, then our mind is not thinking clearly. Our mind is in a twisted way. Yeah? Because you can have lots of possessions and be very miserable. Yeah? Do you know people who have lots of stuff and they're miserable? Yeah. But we think, well, okay, lots of stuff, that's one thing. So maybe I don't need so much stuff. Just half that much. Yeah. But some praise, some fame, I would really like that. You know? Because my whole life, nobody's really appreciated me. You know, my whole life, I try, I do my best, but in primary one, I failed a spelling test. So they streamed me in with the kids that are slow learners because of one spelling test. So my whole life's been handicapped like that. My mother didn't love me. My father didn't love me. I'm so talented, but nobody appreciates me. Everybody else gets the good breaks in life. I don't have any good breaks. Yeah. Even within my family, my parents love my brother or my sister more than they love me. Huh? Anybody here feel that way? Nobody wants to admit it. But I could use, you know, because somehow the world hasn't treated me fairly. I go to work, I work so hard, and I don't get any praise. I don't get the promotion. I don't get the raise. Yeah. Other people make a mess near the coffee machine and I clean it up and nobody says thank you. Then I get married. I work so hard. My spouse doesn't say thank you. I clean the house. I cook food. My kids don't say thank you. My spouse doesn't say thank you. Nobody thanks me. Look how hard I work. I could really use some praise. You know? I deserve some praise. Don't you think? Don't you think? I deserve some praise. You know? And my spouse, at one time, they said they love me. How come they stopped saying that after we got married? Yeah, that wasn't part of the marriage agreement. They're supposed to tell me they love me every day. they don't say they love me? And worse yet, they shout at me. Yeah. They expect me to be their servant. I didn't get married to be somebody's servant. Yeah, so nobody appreciates me. I need some appreciation. I need some love. I need some fame. I need some praise. Don't you think? Otherwise, I'm so depressed. I'm so miserable. Where's my blankie? Yeah. So we're like this, aren't we? You know, inside. So, you know, we want appreciation. We want thank yous. We want kudos. Yeah. We want awards. We want honors. Yeah, we really want that article about us in the Straits Times. Yeah. We want, you know, to be great athletes and great artists and great whatever it is, and to have all of society recognize how wonderful we are. Because we think that if other people think we're good, then we're good. But if other people think we're bad, then we're bad. So people don't praise me, they don't appreciate me, I must be bad. I'm worthless. If they appreciate me, they praise me, then I'm worthwhile. We think like that, and that's a big mistake. Yeah, because just because some people praise us, it doesn't mean we're good. Often it means we know how to put on a good show. Yeah? We know how to impress people. We know how to use people. Yeah? To milk them, to get what we want from them, which is their praise. Yeah? Often that's just what it means, that we're good at being a phony. Yeah? And that's why a person who needs praise with that kind of motivation, they need more and more and more. And they're never satisfied with how much praise they get. Because inside they don't really believe it. Yeah. And part of the problem here is that we have turned our self-esteem over to others to determine. Yeah. Our self-esteem should be something that we create within ourselves. Okay. In other words, if I have the ability to look at my own actions realistically and honestly, then I can own my mistakes without feeling humiliated or ashamed. And I can also own my good qualities without being boastful and arrogant. I can simply evaluate myself. Yeah, I know I have some good qualities. I know I have some faults. I'm trying to practice the Dharma and overcome my faults. I'm trying to enhance my good qualities, not so that people can praise me, not so that I can make more money, but so I can be of more service to other living beings, so that I can create more happiness in this world. So if we have the ability to evaluate ourselves and judge ourselves, not judge, evaluate is a better word, yeah? Then we don't need to look outside to other people to tell us who we are and to tell us if we're worthwhile people or not. Because we feel worthwhile ourselves. Yeah. So if we do things, we don't need other people to say thank you, because we feel good about what we've done. Yeah. If we do something well, we don't need to be famous, because we're confident we can assess our own actions. So then we don't get arrogant, and we don't humiliate others, and we also don't feel humiliated, because we know ourselves, we're honest with ourselves. Because relying on other people to tell us who we are is pretty dangerous business. Yeah, I've had two instances in which that are very prominent in my mind. Probably more things have happened where other people's feedback actually has been contradictory. So one time when I was living in France in the monastery, one nun came and to visit me, and she said, "You keep your vows so strictly that it's just you're rigid. Yeah, you have no flexibility. You are too strict. You're too like this. Yeah, you need to relax. Yeah, and be more friendly and not so strict." And a half an hour later, another monastic came to see me and said, "The way you keep your precepts, you are so sloppy. Yeah? You don't take care of them. You make excuses. You transgress this and that. You need to get your act together." Okay? Now, if I relied on other people to tell me who I am, I'm going to be in a state of confusion, because I just got opposite feedback within a half an hour. So who am I? Am I the one who's inflexible and too strict, or am I the one who's sloppy? Yeah? So neither of those really can other people tell. These are things I need to look inside myself and see, how do I keep my precepts? Do I respect them? Do I make excuses for my transgressions? All this is only something I can tell, and I have to look within myself. Okay? What other people think doesn't really matter. You know, other people can praise you all you want. It doesn't make you healthy. It doesn't get you a good rebirth. It doesn't get you closer to liberation or awakening. Praise does not do anything really for us, except distract us from the path. Yeah. Similarly, blame does not really harm us. Yeah. Receiving blame doesn't mean we're an awful person. It just means, you know, somebody had this thought about what we did. Somebody thinking something doesn't mean that's reality. Yeah, it's something I have to evaluate. If people blame me, I have to look inside. Do I have that quality? Did I make that mistake? If I made that mistake, I need to own it. Stop hiding it and do what I can to make amends. If I didn't make that mistake, then I need to explain to the other person the truth of the matter and resolve it with them. Okay. But whether it's praise, whether it's blame, it doesn't mean I'm good or I'm bad. Because only I can look at this. Because only, you know, when you're a Buddhist, you can't really succeed by being a hypocrite. Yeah? Because karma functions. our actions bring their results. And the value of our actions is not determined by whether other people praise or blame us, or whether we're famous or not famous. The value of our actions depends on our motivation. Yeah? Am I using other people to get something for myself, or do I have a kind intention? Am I seeking revenge, or am I being helpful? Yeah? It's the motivation, the intention. That's why we started our talk this morning with contemplating our intention and deliberately cultivating an altruistic intention so that we can make sure that what we're doing is virtuous. Yeah? And so our intention is only something we and the holy beings know. Yeah? And our intention is what creates the karma. Our karma is what creates our experiences. So there's plenty of people in this world who are very famous, and when they die, who will be born in lower realms. Yeah? Many people, very famous. Everybody looks at them. Oh, if I could only be like so-and-so. Yeah, check up who you're jealous of. Because some of these people create horrible negative karma. Just because you're famous, it doesn't mean you're a good human being. Just because you're a good athlete or a good artist or whatever, a good actor, doesn't mean that you're a good human being. Yeah? Just because you're a famous monastic, just because, you know, whatever it is you do, people praise you, doesn't mean you're going to have a good rebirth. It's our level of practice. Are we following the Buddha's teachings correctly or not? That's what's important. Yeah? And so that's why we need to really monitor our own activities. Yeah? So that's one mental factor, samprajana in Pali. Yeah, it's a mind that monitors our activities. When we talk about mindfulness, mindfulness is what anchors our mind to virtue so that we don't forget it. Mindfulness remembers our precepts. It remembers our values. Introspective awareness checks up and makes sure we're living according to them. That's what's really important to create good karma. And that's what's necessary for really what's meaningful in life. Yeah? Because you get wealth, you get praise, but when you die, it doesn't come with you. Yeah? Doesn't matter how many paper computers and paper cars and paper money they burn. That only pollutes the air. It doesn't come with you to your next life. Yeah. So only our karma, only our habits that we've created. So that's up to us. So let's not be a dung beetle, okay? And be conceited about things that are worthless. Yeah, better that we take the Buddha as our role model and want to be like the Buddha, somebody who has a pure intention. Okay, so there's time for a couple of questions.
We have time for about two questions before we end the session, so first come, first serve people. Any questions for the Venerable?
Good morning, Venerable. To not practice like the dung beetle, would you have to remove yourself from the dung? But what happens if you have no way, no recourse, and you're surrounded by dung all the time?
Uh, Okay, there's two things here. First of all, if you're surrounded by dung all the time, you build your inner strength so that you don't get captivated by the dung. Yeah, you practice the Dharma in your meditation, you build your inner strength. And you look, there's dung, that's nice, I'm not going to eat it. Okay, but check up that mind that says, I have no other choice. Check up if that's true. We always say, I have to do this, I have to do that. Actually, the only thing we have to do is die. That's the only thing that is certain. Everything else, we usually have some choice about. But when we tell ourselves, I have to, then we relinquish our choice. Yeah, there is a choice. Yeah. You say, oh, but I have to go to work to earn a living. You don't have to, you are choosing to. Yeah, you could choose not to. Yeah, if you choose not to, then you experience the results of not going to work. If you go to work, you experience the results of going to work. You have good and bad results from either choice. Yeah, so don't limit yourself by saying, oh, I have to do this. I've been thinking I should publish a book, 5,446,563 excuses for why I can't practice the Dharma. Yeah. I have to do this. I have to do that. I have to do. I have to do. No. You choose to do. So it's much healthier if we own our choices rather than feeling like our life is controlled by other people. If you feel that your life is controlled by other people, that's because you are letting other people control your life. You don't have to, be what everybody else wants you to be. Huh? Often we feel that, my family has so much expectation, I have to fulfill their expectations, therefore I can't, I have to make money and do this, and Dharma I'll squeeze in when I can, but I have to fulfill what my family wants me to do. If I thought like that, I would not be here today with you. Yeah, I would probably be back in America, miserable. Yeah, trying to fulfill my parents' wishes, never having an opportunity to practice the Dharma because I'm trying to please other people. But the amazing thing is, if you have a good intention, so I'm not talking about being selfish. I'm talking about seeking to practice the Dharma because you have a good intention. Other people may be initially unhappy with you, but after a while they get used to it. Because whatever you do to try and be what you think other people think you should be, the more you try and do that, you're never going to succeed. Because one person wants you to be this, the next person wants you to be that. In the process, you lose yourself. You don't know who you are anymore. Okay?
One last question.
So going with the analogy of the dung beetle, somebody at work, a close relative, wants my dung. Okay, they want my position, they want my salary, they want my responsibility. And I am so stingy to give it up.
Oh, right? You like your dung.
I listen to you talking, and of course I know the right answer is, it's not important, give it up. Mm-hmm. But it's my ego or something, I can't bear to do it.
Yeah. Then you experience the results of that. Yeah. If you're holding on to something with your ego and you can't give it up, you will experience the results of that. So in all these kinds of decisions, just ask yourself, you know, okay, I get the benefit of having this position and this salary. Do I accept the results of doing that? Yeah. If I give it up, you know, then I get the benefits of that, and I also get the result of that. Which one at the end of the day is going to make me feel better about myself? Yeah? Which one will help me keep good ethical conduct? Which one will help me become a kind person? Because at the end of the day, yeah, your ethical conduct and your compassion are what's going to be really important to you. Yeah. When you die, you're going to have to give that position up. Yeah? And I hope you don't die going, oh, I don't want to leave my job. Yeah? Yeah? Okay.